Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, I wanted to give you a heads up that the highly anticipated second season of the hit podcast Proof is finally here. So if you're looking for more true crime content, go check it out because Proof is an awesome investigative true crime podcast co-hosted by Susan Simpson of Undisclosed and Jacinda Davis of Evil Lives Here. Proof made headlines for its first season in 2022 after proving the innocence of two Georgia men serving life sentences for murdering their friend, Brian Bowling, when they were just 17 years old. And 25 years later, on December 8th of 2022, both men were finally freed, all based on evidence unearthed by Proof. Now in the second season of Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, Susan and Jacinda are on the case again, this time traveling to the streets of Manteca, California to uncover who really murdered 18-year-old Renee Ramos. On June 5th of 2000, Ramos's body was found buried under a pile of debris inside the shell of a new Home Depot building. Despite tips hinting at alternate suspects, tips that were ignored until now, Renee's boyfriend, 18-year-old skateboarder Jake Silva, and Ty Lopez, the 33-year-old uncle of one of Jake's close friends, were arrested and convicted of her murder. Fans of true crime and investigative series won't want to miss this riveting new season and follow the case as Susan and Jacinda uncover long overlooked evidence about what really happened to Renee by listening to Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to Twisted News, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we're checking out the unsolved Santa Rosa hitchhiker murders, and now have a new lead thanks to the suspect's granddaughter's research. And then, it's over to Colorado to learn about a husband's morbid hobby that led him down the darkest of paths. Get ready for Scary Mysteries, Twisted News. Number 1. The Santa Rosa Hitchhiker Murders. In the early 1970s, Northern California was experiencing a series of brutal killings. It came to be known as the Santa Rosa Hitchhiker Murders. Between 1972 and 73, the bodies of at least seven young female hitchhikers began to surface in the rural areas of Sonoma County and Santa Rosa, their deaths forming a macabre pattern that pointed to the work of a twisted serial killer. Up until today, the perpetrator still remains a mystery. However, one woman, 32-year-old Sierra Barter, and her family think their family member may have been the monster behind it all. The victims were all young women, ranging between the ages of 12 to 23 years old. All of them, of course, had been hitchhiking along the highways of Northern California when they disappeared, a common practice among young people back then. The list of victims included Kim Allen, Lori Cursa, Carolyn Davis, and Teresa Walsh, among others. And there are other possible victims of this killer, 10 in fact, that occurred between 1969 and 75, but those have yet to be conclusively linked to this one individual. But for the ones who are all connected, their deaths were marked by a chilling sameness. They had all been violated and then strangled or stabbed, their bodies then discarded down embankments or in creek beds where sometimes they wouldn't be found for many months. The killer's M.O. hinted at a deep-seated rage against these young victims, choosing methods of murder that were personal, brutal, and often prolonged. Decades later, the case had turned into a time in history for the communities in that area that they looked back on with a sense of sadness. Of course, innocent women had been killed, but how did they never find the guy who did it, and was he still walking among them? all the leads turned ice cold over the years, and any suspects faded away through time. That is until Sierra Barter, a name not historically linked to the investigation, began to piece together something she never even intended to. And the further she dug, the more it looked like her step-grandfather, Jim Mordecai, might have actually been the person who eluded capture all this time. Sierra had a troubled upbringing, and so she started to go to therapy to work on herself, and in doing so, realized, probably like many of us, that she really didn't know much about her family members and who they were in their day-to-day lives. And so she thought that by learning about this, she could better understand who she was and where exactly she came from. Jim Mordecai, a man previously unconnected to the Santa Rosa case, had led a seemingly ordinary life. He was a teacher by profession and to the outside world a good guy, but at home he was a danger, someone who had a history of physical violence and had been known to assault women. Digging further into old police reports, newspaper archives, and talking with those who knew Mordecai during the 1970s, Sierra then began to uncover a disturbing link. Jim had lived in the vicinity of where several of the victims were last seen and had an eerie familiarity with the locations where the bodies were found. Sierra found references in his personal belongings to secluded areas that matched the crime scenes, alongside cryptic notes he kept hidden in a chest in his attic that seemed to allude to the murders. And what struck Sierra the most was the realization that during the time of the murders, Jim exhibited changes in behavior, becoming more reclusive and showing an unusual interest in the local news coverage of the killings. She also found that Jim owned a vehicle matching descriptions given by witnesses of a car seen near several of the hitchhiking sites. Now, armed with this information, Sierra reached out to the police, who had long since moved on from the Santa Rosa cold case. While skeptical at first, detectives couldn't ignore the coincidences and patterns she presented. Her findings reignited interest in the case, leading to a re-examination of evidence with modern forensic techniques, including DNA analysis, which was not available during the initial investigations. While the direct involvement of Jim Mordecai in the Santa Rosa hitchhiking murders remains a subject of investigation, Sierra's efforts have shed new light on a case that may have been forgotten forever. Her determination to seek the truth, driven by a desire to understand her family's hidden past and bring closure to the victims' families now, has highlighted the potential for unsolved mysteries to be revisited with fresh eyes and new technologies. Number 2, Buried Secrets of Tina Sandoval. On October 19, 1995, 23-year-old nurse Tina Sandoval finished her shift at the hospital and then vanished without a trace. She had told her sister Susan and some co-workers that she was going to meet up with her husband John, whom she was separated from, have a long talk and hopefully push forward with a divorce so that Tina could begin to move on with her life. And Tina had met John while they attended the same college in Colorado. He was studying to become a radiology technician, and the two hit it off. By 1992, they had gotten married, but not everything turned out the way Tina had hoped. And John never became a radiologist. He was still trying to find his way, jumping from job to job. But it was his hobby that really caused the friction in their marriage, because it was something that Tina just couldn't ignore. At night when they were both in bed, sometimes John would get up and leave. He would go out onto the streets around Greeley, Colorado before making his way into backyards where he liked to watch women through their windows. And sometimes he'd even open them up and take little trophies if he could. And John liked to find his victims out in the real world, at a supermarket or at the mall. Once he spotted a lady that tickled his fancy, he'd follow them home and then at night drive over there to watch them. Eventually, once he got what he needed, whatever that was, he'd move on to the next woman. so you can understand why Tina had had enough. Beyond just being abnormal and freaky behavior, it also isn't something a wife can simply dismiss. At 23, she had her whole life ahead of her and was ready to date again, but she never got the chance to do that. The day after meeting up with her estranged husband, she was supposed to call her sister, but she didn't. When she couldn't be reached, Susan knew something was wrong, especially because of the odd behavior from John, and so she alerted the authorities. They, of course, knew of John for his peeping Tom ways. He had been caught numerous times, and so they knew he was a bit of an odd duck, to say the least. Police then staked out his place, and finally he arrived home at 4:45 a.m., 2 days after Tina was reported missing. Police were called in to get into his house, where they found him in the shower. He immediately asked for a lawyer. In his car, they found some rope, a level, a recently used pail, and a wet shovel. John was suspect number one, but without any concrete evidence or Tina's body, they couldn't do anything. They built up a stack of trespassing charges, though, and ultimately sent him away for 4 years on that, but he was released, at which point he moved to Las Vegas. But what happened in Vegas doesn't always stay there. By 2009, the new district attorney in Colorado decided to reopen this case. Police got a warrant to search John's Vegas home, where they discovered over 100 hours of videotapes that John had filmed himself. They were of him creepily following around women along the Sunset Strip and in dark alleys. In one of the videos, he follows a young woman to her hotel room, only she didn't close the door all the way. And he waited and eventually made his way inside, where there were four sleeping ladies. John did what John does best. He watched them for 17 minutes in total, and he caught it all on his camera. They would go on and press him hard about Tina. And after all these years of doing things he knew was wrong, his conscience was wearing on him. He agreed to show authorities where he buried Tina all those years back in exchange for a plea deal. He then took them to Greeley Cemetery, to an old World War II veteran's grave, a man named Arthur Hurt. He told them that she was under there, and the Hurt family agreed to exhume the man's body, where underneath that, under about 2 feet of dirt, they found Tina. John had staked out that open grave, knowing it was soon to be filled. He put his wife in there, so that she couldn't divorce him and that he could continue watching all the women he wanted to without being judged. As of right now, he remains behind bars. His next parole hearing is set for 2026. So there were two of the darkest stories that we have for you guys this week. I'm Andrew, and I want to thank you all very much for tuning in. If you like listening to us and want to get an additional and exclusive podcast each and every week, go check us out on Patreon, where now you can get the audio exclusive podcast for just 75 cents per episode, plus access to the entire library. It's free to try, so check it out in the link below. Y'all stay safe out there. I'll see you in the next one.